It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about a new federal farm program to address climate change and how a grant will help Wisconsin dairy farmers invest in products that are called climate smart. According to the Biden administration, the Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities will reach over 60,000 farms nationwide. As we discuss strategies in climate change mitigation and agriculture, call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Tim Trotter is CEO of Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative in Green Bay with member farms in 9 states, including here in Wisconsin. Tim, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, introduce us to your dairy co-op. How does it support dairy farmers in Wisconsin?
The primary focus of Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative is representing dairy farmers with their processors. Our processors range from, you know, large processors to smaller ones, over 32 actually that our farmers ship to. We represent them in the marketplace, but also most importantly on federal priorities and their voice of milk within Washington. So also we're working on climate strategies, which is, you know, obviously the topic of today's conversation.
It sounds as if you have many member farmers. How do you gain consensus? How do you get on the same page with so many different sizes and types of dairy farm operations?
Thank you for asking that. We have a very robust strategic planning development process within our organization, which includes the voice of the farm. The voice of the farm is really what guides our organization and really has steered us in the direction of looking not only at common sense policies and regulations, but most importantly, empowering farms to really align in the marketplace. So we again, that voice of milk is not just a tagline. It's really what we do. We really represent our farms, again, in a very strategic way.
Well, let's take a look at this grant project, $50 million grant underway. U.S. Department of Agriculture is funding this effort through its Climate Smart Commodities Program. Can you describe the project for us?
Well, the project is really, you know, really aligning farmers in the marketplace and doing and really taking a look at the practices they're using on their farms and really evaluating those practices and make sure that it aligns with what the demands of the marketplace is. You know, our farmers do fabulous work every day when they get up and they do their work on their farms. But unfortunately, sometimes we don't always capture the great outcomes that are happening. So our project is really, you know, working with farms, partnering with farms to empower them to really do better things on their farm for the not only the climate, but also for their business, because they're not mutually exclusive. You can have a very well-protected environment and also a very robust agricultural community. So we're really trying to align the practices with the farms and really telling that story and showing the outcomes, because that's what's really important to people who have interest in food.
Well, let's dive into that a little bit. What are some examples of things that are, you know, better things on the farm that are good for the bottom line and good for the environment? What changes would be underway?
Well, a lot of things are happening on the fields, you know, conservation practices. Obviously, I think a lot of people have noticed how in the fall, the fields are turning green, farmers using cover crops to sequester carbon throughout the wintertime and throughout the growing season. For our dairy farms, we're using, you know, interesting concepts for manure management to make sure that they're applying manure when it's the nutrients, I should say, when it's mostly available to the plant. So I think we're really looking at innovative ways, really, how do we manage not only, you know, our cropland, but also manage our herds? Because, you know, one thing we don't remember is, you know, genetics and how we feed our animals and how we take care of our animals all have a role in sustainability and overall climate change.
We're talking with the CEO of Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative in Green Bay. Tim Trotter is here as we look at new climate smart projects and what it means for dairy farmers here in Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions. You can share your concerns at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Tim, before we get further in the jargon, can you share some examples of what are climate smart commodities?
Well, climate smart commodities is being developed. I mean, this is a very intuitive idea by USDA to understand that, you know, climate is on the minds of a lot of Americans, a lot of people throughout the world. And we want to make sure that when we're looking at the global landscape, now you think about the state of Wisconsin, we are a major exporter of protein throughout the world. And we want to make sure that our products that are going out there are meeting not only the expectations of the consumer, but exceeding them. And we believe that agriculture, as we begin to understand the data on our farms and understand how that impacts the great attributes of our dairy products, we want to make sure that we're well aligned in the marketplace. And that, and again, it really comes back to that partnership with consumers, partnership with government, partnership with farmers, all working together to really complement the work that we're doing, but also making sure that we're using all the best practices possible. But the interesting thing about our project is really empowering farms to innovate. And I think this is really an encouraging step by USDA to take, to understand that we need to meet farmers where they're at and help them in their journey forward. But also we want to have that two-way street, because farmers also are the key to a lot of great successes in the whole area of sustainability and climate change. So I think it's that partnership aspect that we're really hoping to shine a light, because this is not new to EDGE. You know, through Farmers for Sustainable Food, we have a robust amount. We have over 300 farms that are working with Farmers for Sustainable Food, and that's our nonprofit arm that's really working on environmental progress throughout the state. We have over 300 farms that have already begun this journey. So what we're hoping to do in this project is to be able to scale that throughout the 9 states that we represent milk in.
In terms of methane, one of the largest sources of methane emissions from agriculture includes manure management, and that is according to the Environmental Protection Agency. Does EDGE plan to examine manure management through this grant project?
Oh, absolutely. We have always been doing this, and many of our farms are very, very proactive in manure management. And I think I mentioned that earlier. You know, it's a great nutrient. It's an organic nutrient, and it's a nutrient that we want to make sure that we maximize, because let's be honest, in today's economics for farmers, they don't want to waste nutrients. We want those nutrients to be available to the plant when they need it. We don't want those nutrients to leach out and get into the water supply. So it's a win-win for everybody, obviously, to manage our nutrients the best they can, because at the end of the day, it's a dollar and cents issue for all farms. But most importantly, it's important to our water supply here in the state of Wisconsin.
As you look at the water supply, the federally funded project includes preserving water quality. What type of climate smart farming practices would improve the surrounding water quality?
Well, when you think about it, if you keep your soil in place and you keep your nutrients in place in the soil, you're going to have, you know, a much greater water quality. You know, we have many projects in the Door and Kewaunee County area, down in Lafayette County. We have projects that have been going on for over 4 years, and they have seen some tremendous advancements in water quality in those areas. And this is not just based on science. This is based on science and looking at the actual data that's being provided through this, through our pilot programs, because we've developed this framework that really empowers farms to look at the tools they have available to them, looking at their farms and saying, what are the areas that I have concerns? What are the areas that I want to improve? And not being prescriptive, but rather just providing them a menu of options to increase water quality. Because let's be honest, I mean, those cows and those farmers are also drinking that water and relying on that natural resource. So it behooves everybody to be on the same page and be able to improve year over year.
Tim Trotter is CEO of EDGE Dairy Farmer Cooperative in Green Bay, member farms in 9 states in the Midwest. You can join the conversation about climate impacts in agriculture. Call in with a question, share comments at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about expanding markets for what the U.S. Department of Agriculture calls climate-smart commodities and how Wisconsin's dairy industry will respond after landing a federal grant. You can be part of the discussion at any point. Call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative CEO Tim Trotter is here. Tim, what is the connection with the dairy industry and beet sugar and sugar beets as climate smart commodities? What is happening there?
Well, it's interesting. You know, when we were putting together our application for the submission to USDA, you know, one of the things we think about is all the different commodities that we work with in the upper Midwest. And when you think about it, not only from an agronomic standpoint, that there's a lot of sugar beets raised, and especially in the Red River Valley of Minnesota, which is a part of our milk fed, but also those products are also used simultaneously in products. When you look at a lot of ingredients, you see milk and sugar typically in a lot of products. So it made sense for us when we're working with CPGs and working with some of the end users, you know, it really made sense for us to partner together in this initiative. In some cases, these will be the same farms, you know, that develop, you know, not only raise beet sugar, but also dairy products. So it just seemed to be a natural fit when you think about where we want to go with this in the brand and in the consumer areas.
What kind of collaboration will be possible with that? How much interaction would you have with those sugar beet producers? What do you envision?
Well, we envision it to be no different than how we are collaborating with farmers here in the state of Wisconsin. It's case by case. You know, every farmer is going to choose if it's a sugar beet grower or and a dairy producer. They're going to select the practices and the systems that are going to best align themselves in the marketplace. You know, I think, you know, the collaboration between crops is very, very, very important. Farmers for Sustainable Food, for an example, which will be implementing a lot of these projects, they work with many commodities, and we work with, you know, pork farms, beef farms, and different commodities. So this is just a kind of an interesting twist, because when we looked at it, when we looked at it globally, you know, sugar is, you know, there's a lot of sugar beets raised in our region, so why not partner with them?
Out of curiosity, the National Library of Medicine says sugar beet crops give dairy cows more energy than grain. Could beet sugar be a sustainable feed alternative for dairy cows?
You know, anything's possible. And that's where I like where this project is going, is looking at the innovative ideas we haven't thought of yet. And I just hope that more and more ideas come forward, because, you know, when you give a farmer a challenge, they will meet it and exceed it. But they just need to have the permission to innovate. And I think this is where I think USDA leaning into this, saying, you know what, we want to meet farmers where they are and help them in their journey and assist them throughout this process. And that's what I think really is coming together here, the relationship and partnership with government and the private sector and agriculture. This is I think, going to be a win-win situation for all.
Let's bring on a call. Jane in Suamico is here. Jane, hi.
Yes, hi. I'm really happy to hear about the environmental concerns of this organization. And I wondered if he could speak to the federal and or state subsidies that direct which crops are grown.
Jane, thank you. Does Edge get into this aspect, Tim?
This is strictly, this has nothing to do with farm subsidies. And frankly, the majority of our farmers are, you know, they're developing their products for the marketplace. You know, this is, again, the DNA of Edge is that we really want to inspire farms to do what's right for their farms. It's not based on what kind of check is being written to them from the U.S. government. That's not a priority of ours. We want to make sure we're aligning with our processors that have viable markets to see the attributes of the great products we're producing. That's where we want to derive the benefits for our farms. The role of USDA here is just helping to connect the dots, making sure we have the right resources for farms from an agronomic standpoint, making sure that they have the tools they need to make those improvements. You know, farmers are not looking for handouts. They're looking for resources that can help guide them. And again, another way where farms can share some of their innovations with other farmers. So I think this is more of a collaborative effort. and you hear $50 million, and yes, that's a lot of money, but when we look at the scale of our business, it's a really, really small part, but it's really, really important that the government has decided to partner with farmers, and consumers can partner with farmers, because when we look at the science, there is some really, really, really direct paths where we all win. So I think this is really what this project's all about, is empowering farmers and consumers to work together.
As you work toward those next steps, EDGES, your cooperative is currently hiring staff for its Climate Smart grant project. Talk about the next phase. What is this next phase?
Well, you know, our model has been developed, and we've been testing the model for the last 5 years. We have a lot of great outcomes that we've seen from that. So now, basically, we just want to scale this project throughout the 9 states where we have dairy farmers and processors who are interested. You know, it's making sure we have the right people in place to do the right things at the right time. So what do farmers need? What assistance do they need? It may be on data collection, understanding their data when they look at their farm, EKG, if you will. You know, what is the wellness of their farm when it comes to an environmental standpoint? What are the areas that they could improve, and what tools best align for their improvement? Because every farm and every farmer are different. Every situation is different. So we want to make sure that when we're scaling this, we want to have people that really can work with farms one-on-one, and that's essentially what we're doing, is we're putting together a staffing model that could go out and work with farms and really help them in their journey. Because once you get them started, they need little direction. Mm-hmm. It's just taking that first step in many cases.
CEO of EDGE Dairy Farmer Cooperative, based in Green Bay, Tim Trotter with us as we look at agricultural sustainability, what it means to Wisconsin dairy farms, and a new federal grant. You can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Tim, on the farm bill, congressional lawmakers are negotiating the 2018, as you know, federal farm bill up for renewal this year, and the Senate set spending at $500 million more than last year. Which issues could Congress prioritize within the farm bill that would most impact your members and the dairy industry in Wisconsin?
Well, what's really important for farmers is, you know, and especially dairy farmers in our sector, is we really want to make sure that, you know, we have really strong agreements within the marketplace. And as we talked about sustainability, it's all about the relationship with their processor and with, you know, the food companies. What we see as a weakness right now is we would love to see that, you know, somehow there could be enabling legislation, and maybe through the farm bill, to help codify what does good written agreements look like. You know, if a farmer is going to position their farm for the future, they want to make sure that they have a strong alignment within their with their processor. And I don't want to give the impression that we feel that there's bad agreements out there. There's not. But we are in a world where we need more certainties. We need to know that if we're producing for a marketplace, that we have that right alignment. So it's kind of an interesting thing that we're looking for within the farm bill, is this enabling legislation to make sure farms have protections for the future. But aside from that, is this making sure that from an export standpoint, that is a big key issue, as I talked about earlier. You know, we are, and we have a great opportunity to be a great and large exporter, especially in the state of Wisconsin, of high quality cheese for a very robust market. We want to make sure that we have safeguards in the farm bill that's really going to promote good trade and good economics. So it's really fundamentals is what's important, making sure we have the right safeguards within USDA to back up good agreements, you know, that we have for trade throughout the world. And just positioning Wisconsin, you know, let's be a little selfish here. We have a great brand. Our brand is known worldwide. We just need to make sure we have a pathway to increase those exports and provide more jobs and opportunities for our state of Wisconsin.
In our last moments together here, just your thoughts on the large national public hearing underway on federal milk marketing orders and the pricing formula for milk. What are you watching for there?
We're just wanting to make sure that things are fair. This, you know, the federal milk marketing order was developed over 80 years ago. It's somewhat archaic, and it needs some tweaks. But we're looking at the future, 10 years down the road. What is it going to take to be competitive in the world, and making sure that our federal programs, federal marketing orders, are really taking advantage of the opportunities we have, and really just trying to inspire farms to do better work and give them some certainty in the marketplace.
Well, Tim, appreciate you joining us. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. Anytime.
Tim Trotter is CEO of Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative. That's in Green Bay. Edge has member dairy farms in 9 states. We value the contributions you make to the morning show. Listeners like you are part of the conversation with our expert guests on Wisconsin news, on politics, on farming. And during our live show, join in with your questions by dialing 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Be part of the morning show weekdays here from 7 to 9. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the morning show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Brad Kohlberg with a story about video dating and the trip of a lifetime.
When you take a risk in life, you've got to prepare for the unexpected. Milwaukee journalist Tom Kircher recalls how joining a video dating service provided him an experience unlike any other.
Compared to online dating, the notion of video dating sounds quaint. And maybe kind of lame. But just one date from video dating provided me a singular experience, transporting me to Russia and other parts of Europe on my one and only trip overseas. Someone, are you looking for me? I'm looking for someone. Here's the story. I wasn't prepared for the shock when I took my second job as a newspaper reporter. I got an 80% pay raise. Yep, 80%. Before that transformational moment, when mail would arrive from dating services, I would throw it away. But I was young, single, new to the area, and suddenly flush with cash. So I decided to try the heart-to-heart dating service. You would do a recorded video interview and fill out a bio. The other heart-to-heart members would do the same. If there was a mutual interest, you'd get each other's phone number. The bio from 27-year-old me said, "I try to be many things. Someone who is sensitive and caring, to whom family is important, and someone who dares to be different, having fun trying the offbeat." Not bad, right? Well, like with online dating, there were rocky moments. The woman who went to the Kentucky Derby and said she forgot to place my bet on what turned out to be the winning horse. And me trying to take a woman to a concert for a singer who, we found out too late, had been dead for several years. But with Patty, we easily filled 3 hours with conversation. One thing she shared was that each summer, she would help chaperone high school students on a European history tour. Patty and I didn't go out on a second date, so I was puzzled when she called, saying she couldn't go on the next European history tour and had recommended that I take her place as a chaperone. Wait, what? She had known me for 3 hours. Well, I met with the high school teacher who led the tour. He signed me up as a chaperone, and he signed up my best buddy, too. So, one video date, and my best friend and I went on a 25-day trip. 2 weeks in Russia and Ukraine, a week in London, stops in Berlin and Paris for $900 each. The other day, when I got the idea to share this story on WPR, I decided to try and look up Patty. Maybe I could reach out to her now. How fortunate that I still had a printout of names from Heart to Heart. So I Googled. Her name popped up right away. In an obituary. Patty died more than a decade ago, leaving a husband and teenage children. How quickly my joyful reminiscing turned sad. But how fortunate I was to have met Patty. She helped give me a life experience that, more than 30 years later, remains unmatched. Bless you, my fleeting friend.
Tom Kircher is a journalist from Milwaukee. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org, on Facebook, and on Instagram. I'm Brad Kolberg.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. What a treat this summer to talk with some winners of the Wisconsin Area Music Industry Awards and sample music from all over our state, cutting across genres. We explore the Christian gospel category now with the band King's Conquest. And you can be part of this music conversation. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Noah Wolf is lead singer and keyboard player of King's Conquest. Noah's siblings, Ezra and Ella, are in the band. Noah, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. It is such an honor to be here with you guys today. So excited to be here. Thank you, Jesus.
Great. Well, you know, there was a CBS News poll. Christian and gospel music is among the fourth most popular genres in the U.S. What does Christian music mean to you?
So I grew up listening to Christian music, being raised in a Christian home, going to church all my life and everything. And so I just fell in love with it. And, you know, there's so many great Christian bands out there. And I love each and every one of them. They've got such wonderful music. And it's just really touched my soul over the years. And I grew up in a family band called MPK, Christian Celtic Band. Perhaps you've heard of us. We played around Wisconsin quite a bit. We wear kilts. We play bagpipes and stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, I do. But yeah, so growing up in the Christian music scene a bit, and then, you know, I hit the age of like 16, 18, somewhere in there. And I got this idea that I wanted to start my own Christian contemporary band, which has developed into King's Conquest and where we're at today.
Do you feel closer to God when you sing?
That can depend. Sometimes the music gig can be kind of a hard thing. You know, sometimes you get that nervous and the pressure and it's like, okay, God, just help me to get through this moment today. But, you know, every time I get up there, he's blessed me with just the right words to say and the right words to sing. And it's been such an honor to be able to do what we do. August has been a pretty busy month for us. We've been blessed with a lot of gigs. And this year has actually been our biggest year yet. So he's definitely taking us places. And we're just super excited. Even about winning this Whammy Award, which to us felt pretty left field. We weren't expecting it. We just kind of threw it out there that, okay, God, if this is something you want to do, we're open to it. And he opened the door. So we just keep pushing through and singing the songs that he lays on our hearts. But
Noah, can you give us some groundwork here? How is Christian music different from, say, gospel or hymns, old hymns sung in church?
Oh, sure. Yes. So there is so much Christian music out there today. So many different genres of Christian music. You've got everything from Christian rap and Christian rock. So Christian contemporary and a little bit of pop rock flair is what we play. And so like gospel and hymns are like the meat and potatoes, in my opinion, of Christian music. I mean, There is so much profound truth, though, and my wife and I, we both love singing the old hymns together. And I actually have an organ at my house in which I just love to sit at. And I will just play the old hymns for like an hour at a time. It's just so relaxing.
So like and Amazing something... Grace, Meat and Potatoes.
Oh, yeah.
How great
totally,
thou art.
Totally. It's the real stuff. It really doesn't get better than that.
Well, let's hear the title track from your new album, Tested by Fire.
Cool. Thank you so much.
The enemy tells me I've lost the war. I won't forget what I'm fighting for. 'Cause you are with me no matter what I face. And you still love me with unexplainable grace. You gave your life for me.
The enemy tells me I've lost the war. I won't forget what I'm fighting for. What do you
yes.
mean by that?
So throughout my life, I have wrestled with so much, you know, self-doubt and fear and anxiety and a lot of things like that that I think many people wrestle with nowadays. And it's so easy to think that you've lost the fight. It's so easy to think that you are defeated and that you have nothing left. But at the end of the day, we've all got Jesus who we can count on and who we can depend on. And so when the devil comes along and whispers in our ears that we have lost the fight, God is there telling us, no, never give up. Just choose me and cling to me and I will give you rest.
What are
the... And then what's that?
I was going to say, what are the greatest issues facing Christians today?
The greatest issues facing Christians today, to be honest, I would have to say sometimes it's ourselves. You know, pride is a major setback. And I think so much of the evil in the world is rooted in pride. Somebody thinking that their own way is better than God's way is for us. And that was what started the problem to begin with, was pride and lust. And so for me, I really got to be aware about that, especially, you know, if I'm going to call myself a Christian and not have the right heart in it and not be following Jesus when I get up there to sing, then I'm in a lot of trouble.
Noah Wolf is lead singer and keyboard player in the Christian band King's Conquest, the band named Christian Gospel Artist of the Year in the Wisconsin Area Music Industry Awards. This is Sunlight from their album Tested by Fire. You can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.
Just beyond the horizon, a new light is rising and scaring the darkness away. A light so blinding that I am finding no shadows in my life today. And though the pain was strong,
it is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the song We Are the Called from Wisconsin's Christian Gospel Band of the Year by the Wisconsin Area Music Industry Awards. We're in conversation with lead singer and keyboardist Noah Wolf from the band King's Conquest, and you can be part of this discussion at any point. Call in with a question, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Noah, you were producing your own music by age 16, as you said, and as the primary songwriter, how do you know when you've written just the right lyrics?
Ooh, that's a good one. So, yeah, I've definitely had a bunch of ideas that I have kind of scratched, and nobody will probably ever hear them, unless sometimes I just got to think about it for a while, and sometimes I get a fresh inspiration on a song that I thought wasn't all that great. Like, we have a song called Hope in the Air, and originally the verse for that song was completely different. And God dropped some new lyrics on my heart, and I'm like, whoa, man, this is like this fits so much better to the song for what I was going for than the prior. So sometimes I just get a fresh idea. I listen to quite a bit of Christian artists, so I sometimes just get inspired by something they might have sang or a melody. I'll just sit down at the piano and sometimes just start improving melodies, and then I'll sometimes get lyrics with it. So
So
that's part of my songwriting process.
you just see what comes up.
Pretty much.
You and your siblings played in the family band, MPK, Mama and the Preacher's
Yes.
Kids. King's Conquest, also a family band lineage. What about being in a family band makes music easier or more challenging?
Oh, there is definitely like more of a groupthink and a certain tightness. Being siblings who all grew up in music together, we all grew up playing music together. My brother and I are both on the worship team at our church. He plays the drums, of course, and then myself on the keyboard. And so we get to play together quite a bit every Sunday and Wednesday when we practice. So, yeah, being part of a family dynamic like that can be very helpful, especially if we have, certain issues come up as a band, such as, oh, guys, I don't know how the logistics for this gig is going to work. Or, when you really just need to talk about your frustrations to someone, that can be so helpful when they're your siblings and they can all kind of understand where the other might be coming from. But then in terms of the music, yeah, sometimes it just absolutely clicks, and we try to get plenty of good practice in together as a band, but there's been times where we practiced maybe twice or even once for any particular show, and then we go and play it, and everybody's like, "Oh my goodness, you knocked it out of the park! That was so good!"
Outside of
So,
your family, how robust is the contemporary Christian music scene in Wisconsin?
yes. So I think there's a lot of contemporary Christian artists popping up all over the US. And I've certainly seen a number of them in Wisconsin. I happen to be friends with a guy who is a wonderful worship leader and Christian contemporary artist himself from here in Wisconsin, along with a few others. There were about 10 names or so, 10, maybe a little more, maybe a little less, that were also listed under the Christian Gospel category for the Whammy Awards this year.
Okay, so do you feel like it's a growing scene in Wisconsin that there's more and more interest in it?
I certainly do. I keep seeing artists pop up on Facebook as well. I follow a couple Wisconsin musicians groups and things on Facebook. And so I always get to keep tabs on who's coming up, who's working on this, who's releasing this song, and all that stuff from right here in my home state.
When you look at those pressures of being in contemporary Christian music, the managing editor of the long-running publication CCM Magazine recently told the New York Times that Christian musicians are under extreme stress and they have to make sure they don't say that wrong thing that gets them canceled. Do you feel scrutiny over your music and lyrics among fans and critics?
So far, no, I have not felt any sort of scrutiny or anything like that. And there's people who just, there's people who don't always agree with Christians on things. And so, but the message that we share and that we sing and what the Lord has put on our hearts, we believe it's for everyone. And we try to make it something that everyone could relate to. And at the end of the day, if our music lifts up someone's soul and makes them feel better from something they were going through, which we have had happen, then thank you, Jesus. I mean, mission accomplished,
We're talking with Wisconsin musician Noah Wolf. He, Noah, and two siblings, Ezra and Ella, make up the Christian band King's Conquest. You can join in with questions at 800-642-1234. Noah, let's hear some more music. This is Make You Shine off your new album, Tested by Fire. When he takes you Make You Shine. What is the inspiration for this song?
Make You Shine. So it comes out of the stories that you'll hear in the Bible of, you know, the process of refining gold or refining silver, how, you know, the process of refining gold and silver has to do with taking this rock that's got this precious metal in it, but, you know, it's surrounded by all this rock that doesn't have that kind of value, and all that other impurifications in the metal need to be burned away so that the pure metal is all that remains. And I've heard it said that, you know, the refiner wants to be able to see his face in that liquid, molten, pure metal. And that's how he knows when it is complete and when it is perfect. So when I wrote this song, Make You Shine, you know, a lot of the songs I write come from within my own personal experiences and things I've gone through in my life. And it hit me that sometimes we go through the fire as people. Sometimes we all go through difficult and hard things, especially nowadays when it seems like life is always chasing right behind us, and we've got something to do tomorrow, and we've got something important to do right now, and something important to do yesterday.
Noah, I just want to jump in here in our just a few moments left. If you can explain the phrase tested by fire and what it means as your album title and what it means in the Bible.
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, just to finish up the thought of Make You Shine, when God takes you through the fire, he wants to make you shine, as the song says. So it's a process of purification that we will never finish until this on this side of heaven. But we can keep pressing towards that goal of being refined and purified by choosing Jesus. Anyways, about Tested by Fire.
Very quickly.
That's another
here.
Song.
Yeah,
that's another song that's a similar idea. If you know the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the Bible, so King Nebuchadnezzar had set up this giant golden statue of himself and said, everyone bow down to this when the musicians start playing. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said, no, we worship God. We don't want to worship a false idol. And Nebuchadnezzar got so mad, he had his guards throw these three men in the fiery furnace.
And Noah, we are out of time. Thank you for joining us. Noah Wolf leads.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Noah Wolf, lead singer, keyboard player in the Christian band King's Conquest. This is Let It Be Now. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.
Let it be now. One day.